This is episode 9 of the Rhode Island Liberty Report. In this episode, we talk about cash business, wine to your doorstep, beach fee increases, and government tampons. Let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios, here are your hosts, Mike and Eric.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report from LibertyRI.com. I'm Mike, and in the studio here with me today is my co-host, Eric.
I'm back.
Back from vacation. How was it?
Back from vacation. Man, it was awesome. So we went to, took the family down to, and I got to give it a plug because it was so great. It's called White Stallion Ranch in Tucson, Arizona. It's a dude ranch. They have horses, you know, and there's, you know, it's all-inclusive type deal. Family run. It's one of only, I think, three dude ranches that are left in Tucson. They used to be like over 100. It's amazing. If you are listening to the show and you're looking for a good place to go on vacation, definitely check out this place because we had a blast. You know, we had our little, you know, 20-month-old went on pony rides almost every day, riding the horses, and we went on horse rides, and they had all sorts of, you can go shooting, you can do all sorts of things. They have all sorts of stuff going on. So we had a blast. It was definitely good to get away. And, you know, I am happy to be back though as well.
Nice,
so
nice.
Good to be here.
Back to the cold.
back to the cold communist Northeast.
The gray, dingy. You know, I'm surprised we're not all wearing like Mao hats and, you know, the whole.
I think, yeah, we're so just worn down here. You know, people are so like it's funny. It's like if you went to a resort or someplace up here, you know, people who work at these places. Like if you want something special or you need something done, like there's always a lot of angst and like stress or like, oh, you know, like over there it's like, oh, can you think we can get a pony ride but before the end of the day? I know there's only like an hour left. Like, oh yeah, sure, yeah, no problem. Yeah, come on down. Like, no big deal. Like, and they're so like relaxed, yeah, and you know, carefree. And up here it's like everyone's like so burdened by everything. It's like they're all uptight.
No, it's funny you mentioned that. I had traveled, it was quite a few months ago, out to Ohio, and it was Cleveland actually, for a job, for work. And it was, I'd lived out in Kentucky and Tennessee when I was in the military, and I lived out other parts of the country, and I'd forgotten how nice people are.
So different.
It's different. Like, it's just a different mentality, you know, different type of life.
I went to school in Colorado for 4 years.
Oh, that's right.
And it was, you know, people are just, yeah, they're way different.
Yeah.
Way different culture. I mean, and actually I think most of the country is like that. When you get into the big urban areas, you know, and it is different, but even California and some of the bigger cities like San Diego and, you know, people are just different.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's because it's sunny and 75 every day. That could
right.
be a big part of it. But
so here's a question for you.
Yes.
We'll get into our topics.
All right, hit me up. Question.
So in Arizona, did they force you to use cash anywhere? Or not force you, but make it mandatory for any of the businesses to take cash?
No. Well, so no, we did stop at a Safeway on the way to the ranch. The guy who picked us up at the airport was nice enough to take us to Safeway so we'd get some things, some provisions and whatnot. And no, they happily accepted cash.
Okay.
No one forced us to do pretty much anything.
Yeah.
So that was nice. I get like, so maybe you can help me out here because obviously I've been gone for a little while. What is the deal with it? What is this legislation they're trying to put?
It's just something that popped up on my radar this week. So apparently there's a rep Mia Ackerman from Cumberland says that she wants to pass legislation to force businesses that they must take cash. They cannot just take, you know.
Okay, so this is like a new movement that I've actually saw a little bit of this in, when I was in Portland, Maine. I went to Portland, Maine for a couple of days with the family recently, a couple of years ago. And there were actually two or three businesses that were, you know, credit card, ATM only or whatever. You know, they weren't taking crypto or anything, but obviously that would be part of this as well. If there are businesses who want to take crypto or don't want cash or whatever, but there were a couple like that, and I thought it was odd.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, they should be able to do whatever the hell they want.
Sure.
But it just seemed odd to me. It's like why would you want all your transactions to be in credit cards and ATMs, especially credit cards where you have to give a percentage of whatever you bring into the credit card companies? you know?
Yeah.
So it did kind of baffle. Maybe it's just because they don't want to deal with having the cash on hand. Maybe.
So that's my thinking, right? So, you know, they're, for one, you should never force a business to do whatever they want, right?
Now, right.
If a business chooses to not take cash,
makes
that's
no
their
sense
choice,
to me.
It might be a bad business decision, right? It might be a dumb move for them. And
probably,
but that's
is
their choice, right?
Right.
It's their business. It's their choice to make those decisions, and their business will either succeed or fail based on those decisions, right? But from a business perspective, you can look at it a couple ways, right? For a safety thing, right? So if there's no cash on the premises, less likely to be robbed by, you know, right, by someone to, you know, trying to going after the cash. Right. Also theft from the employees. That's a big problem in
yes,
retail operations.
And, yes.
You know, employees snaking money, you know,
right,
taking money out of the till. So that's that cuts back on that. And they might have done a cost benefit analysis saying the fees that were being charged for the per transaction is less than what we lose per year in theft. I don't know. You know, you got to
assume. Who knows? That's the point.
The business is calculating those kind of things.
How does right? Mia Ackerman know whether or not this is like, and from what I gather, her whole point is like, oh, well, that's not fair to the people who can't get a credit card or who, you know, first of all, or who, I guess, who can't get a bank account and can't get an ATM card or whatever. Okay. Well, then what right do they have to patronize someone's business?
Yes.
So
her quote in the article, and we linked to it. Well, again, I'll of course throw it in the show notes. It's a WPRI article. Her quote says Ackerman says businesses still have an obligation to be accessible to everybody. Well, a business is accessible to everybody because they want everybody to come in and spend money in their store, right? Or their operation, whatever their
right,
whatever their operation is.
Well, it's good business,
right?
Right, it is good business. But let's say we named a couple examples. Let's say your business is in a very crime ridden area,
yeah,
and so you don't want cash on the premises for your own safety, and you're not allowed to have a gun, God forbid, right? And if you want to defend your business,
right.
Right. So you don't.
Well,
so you
you're
figure,
allowed
okay,
for now.
Let me put a sign on the door that says, you know, EBT accepted, no cash on hand.
Yeah.
Or something or whatever you want to say. There's one example. What if you're in a, you know, you're down in South County in Newport or something, you get a business and you got a lot of college kids who, or it's a seasonal thing. You get a lot of college kids working and you don't really know them that well. And they're kind of in and out and there's a lot of turnover and you don't really trust them all that much. And you've had a lot of experience with theft and people stealing stuff out of the register. Well, maybe, you know what? I'm done. I'm not going to close my business up, but I'm done dealing with this. I can't afford video cameras and security and stuff like that. So that's it. You know,
right. Yeah.
No more cash, and we're done. But no, no. It's Mia Ackerman has to, you know, be all high and mighty and say, well, no, you have to take cash because that shuts people out of the look. That's up to them.
That's again.
They've made the analysis, like you said, that this. The business they might lose by not accepting cash, it might actually be more profitable to them in terms of the business that the money they might lose through theft or through whatever else.
That's right. You know, and it's funny too, the other, you know, some of more of the wording that she says, you know, any retail establishment offering goods or services for sale to discriminate against the prospective customer by requiring the use of credit for a purchase. Now, a couple things there, right? One, it's not just credit, right? You can use your debit card.
Right.
So that's just a transaction from your bank account. So assuming you have cash in your bank account, right?
Right. And
if someone doesn't have a bank account, is only has cash. So here's my
guess. I mean, but who is this person with no bank account, just cash?
Right.
Who's not on some sort of food assistance card?
Right. So here's my thinking, right? If I know there's, you know, XYZ business in town and they only take credit cards or ATM cards or some form of electronic transactions, no cash, right? I'm looking at that as that's an opportunity for me, right? I open up a store, you know, a block away with a big sign flashing saying we take cash, and you know, I'm tracking the business this guy is turning away into my store, you know. So
right,
it's actually provides opportunity for the market if people do that type of thing.
Look, I'm sorry. Again, the market itself as a whole it's almost impossible to suggest that the market itself will shut out people who want to use cash. Right, there will be businesses who accept cash. Okay, undoubtedly in almost any service industry, like if there's one or two stores that don't accept cash, there will be five or 10 that do.
Right.
So, okay, they might be shut out of that particular store, but they're not shut out of the market. And the other issue here too is what about people who feel really adamantly, let's say it's for religious reasons, they don't want to use cash. They don't believe in the federal government and the monetary system, or maybe they don't like "In God We Trust" on the money. Who the hell knows? Let's say they just want to use cryptocurrency. I mean, again, you make these people go through all these hoops to open a business, all these regulations, all these licensing fees, right? And after all, for all their trouble, they can't even decide certain basic things like what kind of, you know, money do I want to accept? How do I want to do these transactions?
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's sickening.
Another thing I find interesting here is it's going the way for cash, where it's almost a little weird to me that they're not going the other way,
right,
requiring electronic transactions, although they might at some point require a business to take electronic transactions.
Well, there's a lot of people who want to eliminate cash altogether.
Right, because it's easier to track, right? It's easier, right, for them to see the exact transactions that were done through your business, and now we can make sure you're paying your proper
right,
theft to the government, and you're coming clean on that, or you can at least be audited to, right, make sure that you're keeping up. So I thought that was a little bit interesting from that perspective. But again, it's a business. At what point is a business not a private entity, right?
I think that ship sailed a long time ago, and I think that they're just chipping away. And I think it's happening faster and faster. The chips are getting bigger, and the hacks are coming across more often, you know? And it's just, as a business, one of the things that you rely on, and the market in general relies on for stability, is predictability. And there's such little predictability, whether you're talking about new laws like this or the minimum wage hikes or whatever, that it's really hard to try to project, you know, what your cost profit margin is going to be in a lot of instances, because you just don't know. All of a sudden now you have to start providing sick days to people that you know, maybe you weren't able to afford to do before, you know, I think it shows a lack of understanding of what it's like to run a business.
Well, that's right.
In the first place, I think people think that, you know, all small business owners are like corporate CEOs who just sit on piles of cash, which no, small business owners who make money and are successful are working at their business as an employee, you know, 12 hours a day, and they're earning a salary working at the business. Let's say it's a little storefront, retail shop. They're at the counter, you know, they're not sitting in some office somewhere doing nothing. They'd be out of business.
Right.
Okay. So it's just, again, that's just ignorance.
So,
you know, in that sense.
So going back to the language you used, discrimination, right? That's something we hear often, right?
Right.
And, you know, whether it's discrimination against people who are, you know, need to use cash, or whether it's race, sex, you know, sexual orientation, religion, you're wearing a purple shirt, you're wearing, you know, brown shoes, like, okay, whatever. But, and as libertarians, we think a business should be able to do that. Not saying it's right. That we got to make that clear. People think, yes, that because someone should be able to do that means, or can do that means they should. And we use this analogy often, but that business will fail, right? If you, right, discriminate as a business, you open up opportunity for competition to come and capitalize that word,
right?
Yeah. Capitalize.
That's kind of the main word.
A flaw that you're creating in the market, you know. So now I'm a business, and I, you know, as a profit motivated business owner, I don't care if you're wearing brown shoes. You come in my store and spend your money, as long as you know, whether it's green or plastic, right, you know, spend your money and then go about
right,
your way. And now, right, that business has also identified itself as a business that discriminates. And people can choose not to go there because it will become
new. Right. Well, I think one of the you know, and this is a big misconception about libertarians is, you know, because especially people who would label themselves as anarchists, right, who are on the very extreme end of the libertarian spectrum, who believe that, look, private property rights are absolute, but it doesn't mean that you are endorsing a certain type of behavior.
Right.
Okay, people don't understand too. During the Jim Crow era, right, the civil rights era, J- Jim Crow was a government law, right? That forced businesses to have this separate but equal sort of standard, right? And you know, everyone knows the sort of famous Woolworth's lunch counter scene, right? Where there was the big boycott and the people sat at the lunch counter and whatnot. You know, do people think that Woolworth's was just sort of like, you know, hands off in this whole situation? Like, no, they were as much protesting this sort of the situation as anyone. And there were a lot of businesses who didn't like this law and being told what to do. And the, you know, obviously, were there other businesses that were happy to do it? Sure. Yeah. But look, the businesses who are letting everybody in the door are going to make more money.
Right.
They just are. And you can go back to examples like no shirt, no shoes, no service. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a business, let's say they made that a law. You have to have a shirt on when you go into a food establishment. Okay. But what if you're a place on the beach, right? You're on the beach and you're right near there and people are walking around with their shirts off all day long. Now, you're saying that they can't try and get a competitive advantage by letting those people in their store. It's a similar thing. It's just, it gets really touchy and really sensitive when you start talking about things like gender or race or whatever, mm-hmm. right? It's a totally different discussion when we look at the principle and say, well, the principle applies regardless.
Right. And you brought up an excellent point with your Woolworth, the Jim Crow example, where the businesses that wanted to discriminate were disguised by the other businesses that were forced to discriminate.
Right.
Right.
Perfect example.
So you
don't know who
that
the racists are.
Exactly. You don't right. know. So now what they've done is just the opposite. They've like, I don't want to give my money to someone who's a racist.
Exactly.
Right. Like I don't want to do that, but nope. Now I might be.
You might
and
be.
And right. I don't know because they're not, you know.
I'd much rather know where the racists are so I can avoid them at all costs. My feeling.
Honestly. What's the saying? Sunshine is the best disinfectant or something?
You got that right. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Absolutely. And look, here's another good example, right? People talk about this, you know, this sort of stuff all the time. And it's like, well, there's a few private schools in this state that, you know, are gender specific.
Right.
Yep. No one seems to have a problem with that. Right. No one seems to. Now, I could be wrong, but there was an issue with a yachting club or a boat club not long ago. Right. That was all men.
It was the yacht club, I believe. Sheldon. Is it Sheldon or one of the somebody belongs to the
something
yacht
it was a
club.
Big issue.
Like down in East Greenwich or something
like that. Anyway, I think it's all men or something like that. Right.
I think so.
And there was a big thing, a big brouhaha. Like they need to accept women, et cetera, et cetera. But how come no one's knocking down Bishop Hendricken's doors? You know, well, because, oh, well, that's different because of what, no, you can't make these little exceptions just because you feel like it. It's either okay or it's not.
I'm a member of the VFW and there's requirements to be a member of the VFW. You have to be a veteran.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's
they're
not
discriminating.
Fair.
Are they discriminating? Right.
That's not fair.
It's a, yeah. Right. So I don't know.
I want to, that's not okay with me.
So
first Quaker member of a VFW hall in the country.
That'd be an interesting. moving along, speaking of retail, right? So now we're going from retail operations to mail order, right? So that's another thing. So there's been a proposal, another lawmaker, let me pull it up real quick, has proposed lifting the restriction on allowing direct wine shipments. So you can go online and buy a box of wine, a case of wine. I guess it could be a box of wine too, depending on your tastes, but, and have it shipped directly to your front door. So, the article does not say who before the Rhode Island House Committee on Small Business later this month. So, essentially, what they're saying, this is a good thing, right? So now you're allowed. You would think
it sounds like a good reversal of a bad law.
Exactly. Why can I not go online and have wine shipped to my?
I didn't even know you couldn't do that.
Right. Exactly. It's not, I'm not a big wine drinker right. either, but you know, I just think of it and I'm like, why can't you do that? Like, I know
with beer it was an issue. I remember someone wanted to get me it was a beer club thing, and someone wanted for Christmas to get me a beer club thing. They had to have it shipped to a business in order to do that. Have it shipped to a family member of mine's business so that I could get it, because it was illegal to send it to a residential home.
Interesting. Yeah. So
in Rhode Island.
In Rhode Island.
Right.
So so we have a potentially good thing. You're deregulating, right? You're opening it up to you know, more freedom for people to do what they want with their money and purchase goods and services. But We're doing it the Rhode Island way, right? So what kind of baggage does this box of wine come with, right?
Jeez. Oh,
it comes with a license in order to ship into Rhode Island. You have to get a license. You have to apply to the state and get a license.
In order to ship.
To ship for okay. the, you're right. So under the bill, which Bill introduced last week, a current wine producer, supplier, importer, wholesaler, distributor, or retailer could obtain a license after submitting an application with $100 registration fee and a copy of the current alcoholic beverage license.
So would this be sort of like if you know, your local wine store wanted to have a website where you could order wine online?
Yep.
And they basically, you could order it through them to your home?
Yes.
Kind of thing?
Yes. Okay. That and as far as I can tell, if you're an out-of-state wine
right.
distributor,
some big or some or winery in California.
Exactly.
Or right.
And you want to buy a case of wine from them, you would have to get your $100 registration fee to get a license in Rhode Island in order to ship to Rhode Island. So, and again, going back to the business within Rhode Island. So not only do you have to pay for your alcoholic beverage license.
Yeah.
Now you have to do another $100 whack for your, you know, license to ship if you want right. to do that. So that's the one big, you know, you have to go to ask for permission from
right.
the government to ship a product.
Please, please, yeah, please, please,
please, please. Will you allow me to do this? So then further restrictions, you're limited to how much wine you can have shipped to you per year. So you're limited to 24 9-liter cases of wine each year for personal use only. So
right. So then this came up a couple of years ago because there was the businesses who were making wine biscuits who carved out an exception in the law saying that they could actually get larger quantities of wine shipped to them directly as a business. But this is for personal use, so that wouldn't apply there. This right. is just if you're just a dude who,
yep.
you know, or a lady
yep.
who likes to drink their wine, 24 limit.
24 cases, which I suppose is a lot of wine, but why the restriction?
What if you want to give it out as Christmas gifts to everybody you know?
That's right. You know, or you have a wine club and you trade wine. Like I know I'm not a wine person. I have friends that are into it and I've been to, you know, parties at their houses and people, each couple brings a bottle of wine and then they have swaps and they do all this other stuff.
Well, how much wine is in a case? Is it like six bottles?
I don't even know.
Yeah.
Like that's how.
I don't either.
But I just like, why restrict it? It just boggles the mind.
And it's not like they have a rationale that often goes along with the legislation. You know, it's just, it's almost like arbitrary. It's like, how do they come up with these numbers? You know? And, you know, it. Yeah.
So the final restriction is direct shippers would not be able to send to an address that is identified as a dry, is identified as dry, and will need to ensure that the containers were shipped with a label that says contains alcohol, signature of person, age 21 or older required for delivery.
What kind of place would be dry?
Well, I know Barrington used to be dry.
The whole town?
The whole town was, I think, just until within the last
couple of years. Like you couldn't have alcohol in your home?
No, you could have it in your home, but you couldn't purchase it within the town. So
maybe, really? Yeah, I didn't even know that.
There was no liquor stores in Barrington for a long time. Now,
yet there were all these kids driving around drunk.
Well, go figure.
I mean, right? Shocking. I figured there were liquor stores everywhere.
That's why in Warren, if you'll notice, there's that liquor store. I don't know if it's still 1776. I forget
yes.
the name of it.
Yes, yes.
It's right on the border, right before you go over yes. the bridge to go into so on that funny. Side. And I'm not sure about the other side.
I see. Probably. Okay.
But
again,
I think restaurants could serve it, if I recall. I didn't eat much in Barrington, you know, a couple
I'm just trying to think if you're ordering this to your house anyway. What kind of residence would be labeled dry?
Dry, yeah, I don't
like a church. I mean, they have wine.
Yeah,
so that wouldn't even apply.
That wouldn't work. Yeah,
a home for children.
I don't know.
It's just odd. And tell me again how this isn't like the mafia. I mean, this is like. I mean, really, it's like the okay, yeah, you can ship wine into our town, but we want a cut, you know, or we want a case for ourselves, or you know, oh, we're going to take it and sell it out the back door at a huge discount. What does it matter? It's all profit, right? It's like that scene in Goodfellas. You know, they're all, the wine's coming in the front door and it's going right out the back door and they're selling it out of a trunk. I mean, there's no difference. It's just legal.
Yeah.
It's legal for them to do it.
Yeah. I just pulled up the actual legislation, the bill, and and funny, I just saw the link at the bottom of the article. I didn't see it when I read it the first time. So the representatives introduced by Representatives Casey, Edwards, Blazejewski, Kennedy, and Morin on February 14th, 2019. So I haven't read through the actual text of the bill, but I will post it in the show notes so everybody can take a look.
Always mystified and wonder like how certain people end up on this legislation. Like, is this an issue they really care about? Or is it like, what?
Here's the punishment for violation of this new potential legislation. Okay. Any person who knowingly makes, participates in, transports, imports, or receives such a shipment is guilty of a misdemeanor punishable by a fine up to and including $1,000 and or imprisonment for a period of up to 1 year.
Holy crap.
Without limitations of any punishment or remedy, criminal or civil, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, interesting. So you can get locked in a cage for
ordering wine to your house.
You got 25 cases this year, you're going to prison or $1,000.
Or if you're the distributor or whatever and you don't have the license, I guess, right? I guess they would probably be fine. They'd probably face a different penalty, right? I'd assume.
No, here's an interesting thing. How do you know? So if you order from XYZ distributor and you get 24 cases from them,
right?
And then you go to ABC distributor and order 10 more cases from them, how are they tracking this?
Oh, that's a really good point. Is the state somehow tracking the shipments to your house?
Yeah, I mean, it might outline that in here. I don't know, but
this is one of those pieces of legislation that you're not going to hear about, except here on the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Like, this is something, and there's tons of bills like this every year that, you know, sometimes they get picked up, sometimes they don't. And often I think times is because there's so many pieces of legislation. And I don't know if anyone's ever actually tried to go through them all, but the titles of these legislations are not always very clear as to what they are.
Right.
And so you can miss some real beauties.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
and we've been accused in the past, and it happens every so often on our Facebook page when we post an article or we talk about something that for all intents and purposes seems like a minor thing. But, they're like, oh, who cares about that? But it's the point that they would go to such length for something so small and simple as to, threaten you with prison for violating this quote unquote simple minor thing.
Well, these are the most telling instances.
That's what it is. Right.
It's like lying, right? It's like, oh, it's just you tell a small lie like, oh, I was sick. And I couldn't come to work, whatever. Right? Okay, it's not a huge deal, right? But if you're willing to lie about something small, don't you think you're going to lie about something big,
bigger,
much more quickly and much more effortlessly?
Right.
You know, people have it backwards. They think, oh, it's easier to lie about something small, but in actuality, if you can't be honest about something that's small, you're definitely not going to be honest about something big. And it's the same thing here. If they're going to hit you up for buying one too many cases of wine for $1,000 in a year in prison, I mean, what do you think they'll do for something, that they deem is worse, like cannabis use or whatever else, So it's just,
yeah.
So those people, I say, look, if you keep sticking your head in the sand and you're going to keep getting kicked in the ass.
speaking of kicking in the ass, this is a horrible subject, but Gina's budget, right? She's got to figure
out. Speaking of heads in the sand,
she's got to figure out a way to fund this monster,
right? And how is she going to do
it? The sea monster.
She's hoping that you'll go to the beach and you'll pay a higher fine to stick your head in the, and you'll stick your head in the sand after you do it, so that you don't care.
Yeah,
and then she's going to kick you in the ass. Yeah.
So whether you're running into Sasquatch at the campground or the sea monster out in the ocean, you're going to pay extra.
Man, oh man.
So
did they just release the amounts by which they wanted to raise these fees? They did something, but they said between $2 and $4 a day.
Essentially, they're doubling it from
right.
So it's like $2 now. I think it's up to $4.
And so that means if you're getting a season pass at say $60, it's going to be $120. Is that right?
I'm not sure about the season pass. I want to say that's cheaper. Was it $10 a year?
Just a daily, beach goer and you don't have, you're just paying by the day, it's going to be twice as much.
Right.
And there's another one of those issues, Mike, right, where people are like, well, oh, so it's $10 instead of 5 or 8 or whatever. What's the difference? You know, who cares? Like, you know, they got to clean the beaches. They got to do this. They got to do that. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess, but I mean, who even says that this money is going to be used to clean the beaches?
Right.
There's no guarantee of that.
No, it goes into, does it go into a different fund? I'm not sure.
I think one of the news reports I had read on Twitter was they were saying that it's likely that this money will be scooped up to fund something else.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, she can go out there and say, we need to protect our beaches and they're beautiful and they're important to our tourism. And it's like the worst Gina Raimondo impression ever.
Never.
But she can say that all she wants. But if there's nothing in the legislation that specifically earmarks the beach fees to clean the beaches, then it's like the 911 money.
Right.
And they just scoop it up and they use it for something else.
So I've got the Go Local Prov article here open. And basically in the first paragraph, some beach fees will increase as much as 33%. Interesting quote here from our friend Pat Ford from the Libertarian Party of Rhode Island. Make no mistake, beach fees are nothing less than an institution of a regressive tax on the poor, for whom public parks and beaches have represented an affordable family-friendly escape from the inner city.
That's absolutely true.
Yep. So again,
beaches and parks are main sources of entertainment for people who don't have a lot of money.
Don't have a lot of money, right? And for the people that those couple dollars do mean a lot, right? That
especially when you have a family of four.
Exactly.
Or right. 5 or 6. I mean, so, you know, I mean,
yep. So
that's an extra 10, 20 bucks. That could have been your, you know, your French fries at the concession stand or something. I mean, you know.
Yep. So the University of Rhode Island top economist Lynn Lodaro says that the fee increase could be scooped and used for other budget needs.
Exactly.
Quote, but the Rhode Island economy is slowing down and the tax revenue disappoints and they need more money. I doubt they'll keep this just for the beaches and the campgrounds. This will be another money grab by the general fund, said Lodaro.
Obviously. You know what this is too?
Lodaro.
This is the snake eating its own tail, right? He's saying here in this quote that the economy is slowing down and as such, they're not getting as much tax revenue as they've been getting in the past, right? Because if the economy in general is making less money, that means less taxes in total that are going to the government. So what's their solution? Raise the taxes, raise the fees. Well, guess what? That's even more money coming out of the economy. So what's going to happen? Okay, that might stabilize it for a year or two, right? But then the economy slows even more and revenue goes down again and they have to keep raising the taxes and the fees. It's a perpetual cycle that feeds itself and doesn't solve anything.
I'd give a little credit to our friend Blake Filippi, who we've criticized in the past for some certain things, but he makes a quote on this. He's in opposition to raising the fees. He says sound economic policy would be a balanced budget in the middle of an economic boom without having to further nickel and dime Rhode Island families. Government's failure to address its spending sets our state up for immense pain when another recession hits. So credit to Blake for opposing that. And then as we've always said, we give credit where credit is due. And when you step on it, we'll call you out.
I mean, yeah, he's totally right. I mean, he's 100% right in what he's saying. So he's right on. And, you know, it's good that, you know, it is good that he's out there pushing that message and he's saying these things. It's great.
Yeah. So we had talked to just a little bit briefly before we started recording the idea that, you know, this, there is also the potential for privatization to minimize this, right? And of course, the kickback we're going to get from, you know, the progressives largely is that, well, that we, like we just talked about, is an affordable option. But if, again, I'm doing this and I think that I can potentially maybe benefit from families buying hot dogs instead of parking their car, you know, or another option, I'm going to, you know, I don't know what the business model would be because I'm not in the business. But.
Well, look at it like this. So Sam Bell was one of the people that was criticizing, you know, was saying that this is, you know, the beach fees. He's actually against it too, saying but his argument is that they're unconstitutional, that the beach should be free and open to the people. And that's a common argument that a lot of people make. My issue with that is that look, you can criticize the private beach clubs all you want and say that they're for the wealthy, they're for the rich, they're exclusive. Yeah, that's because they're some of them are 100 years old and they've been grandfathered into the system and they're almost protected from being subdivided, right? Because once they, if they were to start to sell off parts of their, like their beach club or whatever,
yep.
no one can buy it because right. it's illegal
yep.
to buy beach land, right? So they're basically just kept intact. Yep. If you opened up the beachfront to private, you know, businesses and people want to buy it, who says there couldn't be a small beach that right. maybe you could you know, 100 people could frequent that was had its own fee and it was cheaper. Or let's say there was another one that was free, but you had to pay for hot dogs. Yeah. Let the market sort it out.
And here's another thing that I think a lot of times libertarians miss as well. What says you can't form a trust, an organization that's a trust
right.
that's, you know, all these people that think the coastline should be open to all, they come together, they purchase the property and they let everybody go for free.
It's a nonprofit.
They have a nonprofit. They have right. a yearly fundraiser, auction, whatever, however they raise their money to help keep the beach clean. And so there are options in the market that it's not always profit based, right?
No, of course not.
There are a lot of land trusts.
Yes. And charity is very important.
Right. Sanctuaries yeah. and all that type of stuff is, you know, a great way to provide something to everyone while people coming together for a cause
yep.
and they think this should be provided and it's out of the hands of government. They get to manage. And when they do that, they have a vested interest in making sure that stays nice.
Cause they care about it.
They care about it. They've dedicated their lives to preserving this.
Their names are on it for all we know.
So,
that's
another good one. So I think we, you know, that would be a good example of a setup like that, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. And I think that it always makes me kind of laugh that some of these people who, you know, like will refer to themselves as bleeding hearts have absolutely no faith in the charitable community and the charitable organizations in the state or in the country. They have no faith that they can do the work that needs to be done. And I tell you what, I have no doubts that people who run nonprofits and run charities, that they can be successful
yep.
because they care and they have a their own vested interest, which is that they care deeply about a particular issue right. and they don't need to use force in order to impose that on other people.
Yeah.
They find other like-minded people.
And there's always a big complaint. And there's the opposite side of that. There are people that run charitable organizations that are less than honest, if you will. They, you know, they pay themselves large salaries. They, you know, those types of things. But that's something that can be exposed.
Yeah.
And I think it was the Wounded Warrior Foundation a couple of years ago that was kind of exposed.
For yes.
Even the Red Cross has had
issues. The Red Cross has had big issues. The Wounded Warriors Project had big issues with, you know, what, like 5% of the donations go to the Warriors or whatever.
Yep. Yep. So that, therefore, it benefits charity to publish that. So some of this has been found out through looking at their government filings. But as a charity, if I am truly a believer in the charity and nonprofit, it would behoove me to publish that information publicly so people can look at our records, I'm using the term ours, but and see how we're spending our money and then say, oh, those guys are pretty good. You know, they're taking reasonable salaries for the work and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to give my money to them. So there's another charity. It's a clean water charity, I believe.
Sierra Club.
Oh yeah, the guy's name is Lofton Asensio. Oh no,
oh, no, that's a different thing. Oh,
okay.
There's nothing clean about him.
Yeah, they do. It's a global charity. They go into underdeveloped countries and dig wells and provide clean water sources and all this other stuff. And what they've done is I'm shooting from the hip here, but as far as I understand it, for their administrative costs, so their overhead costs, they look for large donors for that money. So they find people that will fund the administration of the charity. So that, and then every dime that gets donated to the charity from individuals is put into actually building wells or running pipes and those types of things. So they've covered their overhead. their salaries. Everything is covered by people who are willing to cover that.
Right.
And every other dime is spent on the actual mission.
Right. The average Joe wants to spend 10 bucks on
exactly. It's not going to the guy in charge.
Right. Eight out of that $10 isn't going to someone's salary. It's going to actually, they can actually feel like, okay, I've actually have helped.
Yeah. I'll try to remember to look that charity up, and I'll post that in the show notes as well. But speaking of beaches, so I was talking about this next topic, with my wife last night, and trying to, you know, we were just kind of bouncing it back and forth. And she told me something about something called beach whistles.
Beach whistles?
I guess my niece had told her about them. They're
Why do I feel like this is going to be incredibly inappropriate? Go ahead.
So they're the applicators, I guess you call them, for tampons.
Okay.
The plastic applicators that wash up on the beach. My niece calls them beach whistles.
You know, I'm a little disturbed that these things are just washing up on the beach all the time too. I mean,
right. So speaking of beach whistles, or as we call here, government tampons.
I think beach whistles might be the new standard for segues. So Jorge Olorza, in his infinite wisdom, has decided to start a program in the schools in Providence that will make available free feminine hygiene products to certain students. So I'm guessing there must be some sort of need-based something involved with this. But there was a hilarious picture of him at his desk with just piles of Always maxi pads and Tampax and stuff in front of him, you know, and he's smiling, and it was really funny.
Right.
Apparently this is an issue. There's a lot of girls, young girls in school who are missing school because they can't afford feminine hygiene products.
Right. And of course, being two guys talking about this subject, we're going to be labeled, you know, sex.
I'm married.
Right. Yeah.
I've purchased more, you know, feminine hygiene products, you know, because I do all the grocery shopping. So, you know, I'm sorry. Anyone wants to tell me I can't talk about this stuff, I'm around it all the time. You know, I have a daughter. Eventually she will get to an age where she's pound sand.
And so we're not belittling the issue, right? The issue, I'm sure, is real. I'm sure there is a need for it within the community, low income families. I didn't see a restriction on who can get them. As far as I could read, there would be a dispensers within the four schools. It is the Hope High School, Classical High School, Del Soto Middle School, and Green Middle School. So these are the pilot schools that they're
and there's going to be dispensers where people can just get them for free.
Yeah. Now available to students free of cost in designated bathrooms in the high school.
All right. So right away, the whole argument of there are certain students who can't afford these products. How do we know that the kids who can't afford them are just going to go raid the cabinet, steal all the maxi pads, and run out the door and save themselves some money?
Right. Just coined another term here. So we had the Obama phone, right? So do we now have Alorza pads?
Alorza pads. That's a nice ring to it.
Yeah. But that one came from my wife as well. So
Let's get her in here.
Yeah, she is clever.
Guest host.
Like I said, so, you know, great. It's, you know, Mayor Lorza's got a bully pulpit, right? He can reach out to thousands of people. People listen to him because he's the mayor. Whether you agree with him or not, you're going to listen to what he has to say, by and large. Why could he? So how do we think this is funded, right? Would you think it's funded by reaching out to these companies that make these products, ask them to maybe sponsor the program, or
naming rights for the gym, you know, the Tampax field?
Exactly. Right. Well, I'm thinking if you get a young woman who's using these products, starts off with a particular brand of product, like a lot of people are brand specific, the brand loyalty, right? So now you've got this person could go on for the rest of their life,
right,
becoming a user of whatever company that they were exposed to at a young age, you know. So so there's that thing. But no, this program was announced during Elorza's fiscal year 19 budget address that will be applied to the Providence Public Middle Schools. So they're going to use tax dollars to fund this instead of. So that, well, we just offer, you know, just recommended one way, right? Reaching out to the companies, or just reaching out to the community, you know, people that can contribute and provide these, you know, these products to donate them, or you know, either donate the products themselves or donate the money to buy them. Maybe they can get a deal, buy in bulk, you know, kind of thing. I don't know how that works, but generally that's how it works. You buy it wholesale, it's cheaper.
Right. And I think part of it, right. And I think that part of the argument too, is this something that government should be involving itself in, especially with regards to the schools? I mean, I could think of a lot of things that are, as he said in his tweet, you know, a fact of life that might get in the way of someone's schooling, like diarrhea.
Right.
You know, are we going to make, certain medications available to kids who, let's say, they're going to school that day and they're having diarrhea and they don't want to have to run out of the classroom and miss part of the lesson to get to the bathroom? I mean, how far do you want to take it? I mean, why not give the girls Midol, free Midol? What if they're having, you know, debilitating menstrual cramps and they have to go to the nurse?
Yep.
That's a fact of life. Why not just give them free Midol? Why not? I mean, I could go on and on and on. How about the kids who have to leave class because they're so thirsty, they have to use the water fountain? Bottled water for everybody. I mean, you could just go on and on and on, and it will never stop.
Yeah.
It'll never stop.
I'm just going to read a quote here from one of the people that, or two of the people that pushed the for the initiative. So a year after meeting with local educator Deidre Kalish and Cavell Christie, I could be butchering those names, of Planned Parenthood and the Alorza administration, I'm excited to see that our advocacy for menstrual equity has helped inspire the launch of the menstrual hygiene product pilot program. Our students deserve equal access to quality menstrual products without stigma because of having a period is not a taboo. So again, it's the language that they're using, right? Right. Menstrual equity. And it goes even deeper than that. I think this is, you're indoctrinating these kids to say that the government will provide for even your hygiene. Like it's,
you know, bad breath is really embarrassing, Mike. I think we need toothbrushes and toothpaste available for all the kids in school who might not be able to afford toothpaste. You know, just the term makes me like menstrual equity. Like, I don't even know what to do with that term. What?
It's becoming like something out of 1984.
It's craziness. Right? It's
this.
And okay, so wait. And so who is the city buying these products from? Does it say?
I do not see it in here. It just says quality products.
Yeah. How do they, and I'm wondering, how do they decide which brand?
Right.
Who's making money off this? Are they getting them from Planned Parenthood? Is Planned Parenthood buying them and then selling them to the city? I mean, how do we, you know, again, it's the same with school lunches. It's like, well, what food service gets the contract? How is that handed out? Are they going to put it out to bid? You know, how is this? And now are they going to be they say quality products that could be expensive. I'm sure there's menstrual products out there that aren't as quality that are cheaper.
Right. Right.
So what do you, what if there's a budget crisis and, you know, what are we going to cut? Are we going to cut the menstrual pads, or are we going to cut, you know, the math program or the sports program or the music? I don't know. It seems to me like, you know what this is? This is Jorge Elorza.
He's pandering.
He's pandering, and he wants attention. This is one of those stories that gets retweeted on Twitter over and over and over again by both people who are supporters and by people who are like, this is nuts. And it gets his face out there. He's hoping this might be like one of those national curiosity type stories, and that he can go on CNN and talk about, we're the first in the country to be providing menstrual products to our students. And that's all this
and the donations will roll into his account, because that's everybody
nationally.
I would love to monitor the reach of this message versus the increase in his actual, campaign finance account.
That's all this. And I hate to be that cynical about it, because maybe he really does care about this issue. It is very possible. And I don't want to totally just dismiss that. Maybe he cares so much about there being certain girls in the schools who are missing class or missing school because they're on their period. Maybe he really cares about that. I don't know. I'm not in his head, but this is just what it seems like to me. And it also, and part of the reason it seems like this to me is because if he really cared about these particular students who had a need, then why wouldn't you target those specific students? Why would you just be putting free stuff in the bathroom that anyone could take? It makes no sense.
So on that note, so they said to experiment with the different delivery options, timed dispensers were installed in one designated female bathroom and one gender neutral bathroom at both Classical Green and Green Middle School for the program pilot trial. Timed dispensers carrying the free period products have been installed in every female bathroom and in the school's gender neutral bathroom at Hope High School and Del Sesto Middle School. So I don't know what a timed dispenser is.
I think it means that you pull the lever and it opens up for a certain amount of time.
Okay.
And then it closes back up maybe or something like that. Cause I think they did this with condoms at one point.
Okay.
In schools. I think they had condom dispensers where you put a quarter in, you paid for it. You put the quarter in and the thing opened up and you took it or whatever. Because they were trying to promote safe sex or whatever.
So I think it's important that we as we wrap up, we end on a note of, like, we're not saying this isn't a problem. We're not saying there aren't solutions to the problem. We're just saying, why is government, again, this is using tax dollars. So this is money that's taken from people through the threat of force to fund this, right?
Right.
As far as we can tell, because it's a budget item. So why is that the solution? Why can't they figure out in this day and age, figure out a way to do this in a peaceful, non-coercive manner? Like, if this is a real issue and people are passionate about
it,
they will support the program.
Right. Why not have a tampon drive at school? And then the kids can anonymously gather what they need.
Yep.
I mean, if they have food can drives all the time.
Have, bring a box of maxi pads to the Providence Bruins night. You know what I mean?
Right. look, and here's the thing. If he brings in some third party to provide this stuff, then he doesn't get the credit for being the great. He's not the one providing it. If it comes from the city, he can put his name on every, dispenser that's in the, just like he puts his name on every sign for a road project in the city. Yeah. He can do the same thing. Look, I'm glad that maybe if it is a problem, that the problem will be solved. It's being solved in a completely ridiculous way and in a way is it a big portion of the budget? I'm sure it's not, but it's still force. It's still aggression because you're using tax dollars for it. And if it's not a huge portion of the budget and it's really not a lot of money, it seems like it'd be pretty easy to supply it through donations.
Yep. And it goes to the final point of more government with our younger adults, getting them indoctrinated into the government will provide the solution to all your problems.
Yeah, and it's just creepy. Like, get your politicians out of my school. You know what I mean? Gina did this when she was pushing the free college. She was going to the high schools and she was talking to the kids. Like it's just get away from my kids. You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost like you're trying to influence my kid to vote for you when they become of age to vote. Oh, I'm going to vote for Alorza because he got me, free menstrual products. I mean, look, once you're 18, fine. Campaign, whatever. Just stay away from my kids. Stay out of my schools.
That's right. And I am I believe 100% that they are doing that by design. They want to expose these kids to politicians at a young age so they can influence the way they think. Become voters.
It's at least in their head somewhere when this is going. That calculation happens at some point. Whether how big that calculation is and how big a part of their decision-making process is hard to tell.
Right.
It might start off as, well, this is a really important issue. We need to do something about it. At some point, that thought of this could be good for me politically pops into their head and maybe it disappears not that long after, but it's there and it's part of the motivation. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah. So on that note, we'll wrap it up for this this episode and welcome back and glad.
Thank you. It's good to be back and
I completely butchered your closing last time. So
you're being silly. And I want to thank John, who I think did a terrific job last week and stepping in. I had a lot of fun listening to the podcast with him on it. It was great. And he's really knowledgeable about all the issues you guys talked about. If you would like to continue to listen to the podcast, you can find it on any podcast platform, all of the major ones, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. You can also, of course, contact us on the Facebook page, Liberty RI, on Twitter, Liberty RI. Or, of course, you can go to libertyri.com. You can also email us. It's mike@libertyri.com or eric@libertyri.com. Send us your questions. Send us any topics you'd like to talk about. Reach out to us on the Facebook page. And please subscribe to us on the podcast platforms. This way, every time we put out a new episode, it'll automatically pop up on your phone. You'll get an alert saying, hey, new Rhode Island Liberty Report episode is out. Please leave us a comment if you've got the time. I'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.
Take it easy.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.